Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the John Clayton Show. And you know what would be great is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning on this sunny morning. Hope everybody's going to be enjoying today and getting outside a little bit. I don't know if I will, but of course, hope you get a chance to be able to do it. But it's kind of good because with the weather starting to warm up, you can see maybe a good spring in the forecast. We get started with the five biggest stories of the day, and the top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Here's the 2-1. Swung on and blasted to right field. This is way back and gone. Robbie Cano, no doubt about that one. Home run number 100 in his Mariners career. Puts it into the seats here in Cleveland. Robbie Cano, a 2-run blast, his third of the season. The Mariners add on. It is 5-0 M's.
And we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Chain Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Well, the good streak continues. They opened the series with a good one against the Oakland A's. Felix Hernandez going 6 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, 7 strikeouts. Good performance. D. Gordon went 5 for 5, had 2 steals. He now leads the American League with 12 home runs. And as you heard, Nelson Cruz blasted a 410-foot 3-run homer in the 5th inning. So now, this is the best start officially for the Mariners since 2003. They're 17-11, and now that's a good one. And of course, Edwin Diaz again coming in there getting his 12th save of the year. Series continues tonight, 7-10, with James Paxton going up against Brett Anderson. And so now with the record at 17-11, you got to feel good about the way things are going. The hitting continues, good solid pitching, good bullpen, and that's all you really need. I mean, you got to be able to do that. The key also is staying healthy. Well, maybe that's not going to be the case. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
Yeah, Erasmo, probably a little bit more major than Danny. Erasmo had the setback early in spring training. We got him going in a couple starts. Just didn't look that sharp. The ball wasn't coming out of his hand great. And then, during his side session the other day, he felt like he had a little cramp in his shoulder. Doctor looked at him yesterday. So he's going to be down for a while. Maybe, anywhere up to a month, his shoulder's barking pretty good. Altuviel, a little bit different situation. He's been a little tight in his shoulder as well coming out of the ball game the other day. Got looked at yesterday, and they thought it was best to give him a little breather, so he'll be shut down for at least 10 days.
So that's Scott Servais talking about the injuries, and not good again. All of a sudden, it started the season out with 4 of the 9 top players on defense or on the team as far as position players hitting the 10-day disabled list. Now, Erasmo Ramirez is going to be out for a month with a right teres major strain. And Dan Altuviel, of course, shortening the bullpen. He's got that AC joint inflammation. So Wade LeBlanc moves into the starting rotation over the weekend. Casey Lawrence was called back from Tacoma. Guillermo Heredia was called up, and so they get that. And, of course, there's maybe some big news brewing over the weekend. And I don't know. What I'm starting to hear, Maura, is I wouldn't be surprised if this weekend you may get Ichiro retiring.
Number three.
The NFL has reviewed 40,000 plays from recent seasons and found fewer than 5 instances of what would be considered a flagrant and thus ejection-worthy violation. One would be the hit by Bears linebacker Danny Trevathan on Packers receiver Devontae Adams last year. We all thought he should have been ejected for that. He was ultimately suspended for that infraction. Here's the problem. And maybe it's just a distinction between what's a violation and what triggers an ejection. So maybe based on 40,000 plays, there'd be 4 ejections, but maybe based upon last year's entire snaps, there would be far more than 10 violations. I just don't know what the difference is between a violation and an ejection.
Well, I think the big thing is Mike Florio talking about the summit that's going on as we speak, and they are talking about the rule changes. Yesterday, they talked about the lowering the head penalty, and of course, that's even more confusing than ever. You know, they reviewed 40,000 plays, and they're finding out there may be four ejections. Okay, that's fine, but when they get the scary one is now they're talking about as many as like 2 to 5 penalties that they spot in each game, and all of those are going to at least be ones that may have to get reviewed, and that's going to slow down the game. And so I just don't like it. Again, I know safety's a big issue, and of course today's conversation gears around changing things on the kickoff returns and the kickoffs to a point where next year there may not be kickoffs. I mean, they are going to continue kickoffs, but I just think this is so vague and so confusing that, you know, what they're talking about is that instant replay will be used to affirm or overrule any ejection that's made on the field. All right, that's okay. And, you know, now the committee has always been one to hold back and not, I repeat, not want to have all the extra type of replays. So now you're going to have probably longer games, more stoppages. I just don't like it. I just think it's too much.
Yeah, I really don't like it either, and I think having an average of 5 per game, especially if they're going to be using replay to go over these, it's going to be a lot of stoppages.
I know, and that's what you don't want. I mean, you want to see the game, and it's like, why complicate things? I mean, one, you're in the position where in a year you're probably taking away an exciting play, and now what's the excitement? Oh, let's have a replay. Let's go to New York and see what they say. I mean, somebody puts on a headset. Oh, that's really exciting. You really enjoy that type of stuff. And, you know, isn't that what you want to get away from? Isn't that what you want to try to stop? And I just, I don't know. I'm just baffled that they're making this bold of a move, and here it is May. They have the summit going on, and there still seems to be so much more confusion as to how these are going to go. I mean, confusion in the sense that you had about 4 or 5 coaches that flew to New York to try to get an understanding of it so they know what to teach their players. I mean, you know, you got now teams that are assembling for the OTAs, and they don't know exactly what to teach as far as what to do with lowering the head and the offensive linemen. I don't know. Maura, this could be a disaster.
Number 4.
Former San Francisco 49ers safety Eric Reed has filed a collusion grievance against the NFL over his employment status. A source told ESPN that Reed is working with attorney Mark Garagos, who's also representing his former teammate Colin Kaepernick, in his collusion grievance against the league.
So Eric Reed, frustrated that he hasn't gotten the job and he's only had one visit, understandably wants to try to find out what is going on, but I don't know if we're going to be able to find out much. The proof collusion is going to be very difficult. And now the fact that you're suing the National Football League, much like Colin Kaepernick, I think it's going to find it harder for both these players to get back and find on teams, you know, because now what you have to do is have discovery and then start to go through and get cell phones of owners and all that. I mean, Reed's 26 years old and a pretty good player. Just had his rookie contract expired. And, of course, he, like Colin Kaepernick of the 49ers, you know, they stood side by side, kneeled side by side or so, and protesting the police brutality and racial inequality and all that stuff with the national anthem. But I don't know. Taking the collusion route, not going to get you back in the league that much faster. I think Eric Reed should be in the league. I think it's sad that he's not. But now he's made it even tougher for him to get back into football.
Number 5.
Feels good to be back on the floor. Thank God for health and the ability to play the game I love. Great teammates and big win for us.
And a big win for Golden State as they take the win. And, of course, the Raptors end up losing to the Cavaliers in overtime. But the big thing, and now Golden State really starting to show how good they're going to be. He had a second-degree MCL sprain, Steph Curry. Had 28.7 rebounds and, you know, looked pretty good in that first game. Had not played since March 23rd. Warriors get the 121-116 victory and now lead the Pelicans 2-0. And the Cavs just continue to just get by. LeBron had to score 26 points, have a triple-double, but they won by overtime over the Raptors 113-112. And then one of the real strange stories, rapper Drake got into it with Kendrick Perkins at the halftime, inserting himself in trash-talking between Perkins and his former teammate Serge Ibaka. I mean, that's weird. And here's Drake. He's 6 foot tall. You know, Perkins is 6'10". I don't know, Drake. I think you might want to hold back on that one. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Well, coming up next, we're going to go under further review and look what the draft has brought to Seattle and start looking at some contributors coming up. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under Further Review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Okay, before we get into Under Further Review, where we try to look at what's going on big in sports, we do have some news coming out of New York as far as the safety committee. Looks like the competition committee is broken. And here's some of the things that they're talking about as far as the changes on the kickoff. Okay, so what they're thinking about doing is eliminating the two-man wedge, no running starts on kickoff team, and only three players allowed deep. Now, Rich McKay also goes in there and says the lowering the helmet rule and this the changes that they're proposing on the kickoffs are ones that should start cutting down some of the concussions, which right now they say five times the concussions on kickoffs than on the regular play. So the changes now at least being proposed and are be brought to the meeting in Atlanta coming up on the 21st. No two-man wedge blocking. They will then start to maybe have no running starts for the kickoff team on coverage and only three players allowed deep. So those are the things that they're hoping can make some changes. All right, under further review, of course, the Seahawks had the draft on the weekend, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, came up with nine players, and of course, trying to figure out who's going to make the impact first is going to be one of the keys, because obviously when you have a draft, you want to get as many of the good young players out there as quick as possible. On Brock and Salk earlier today, they were talking about their players that they pick who can make the first-year impacts for the Seahawks.
When it's all said and done, Brock, which of these Seahawks draft picks will end up as the best value? Jim loves value picks, as you know. Jim Moore's a big value pick guy.
It's going to be Shaquem. He's going to play in this league. He's going to play. He's going to be a difference maker. I think he's going to be a dominant special teams player. And in that phase of the game, if you're a special teams captain and you're a fifth-round pick, I think he's going to rush the passer very well. He's going to be a guy that gets 4, 5, 6 sacks, you know, when he's given those opportunities. And can he play will linebacker down in and down out, or is he just a nickel will linebacker? Time will tell on that front. And his tackling will be the end-all, be-all. But to me, I think Shaquem Griffin in the fifth round is going to be the greatest value play.
Yeah, I'll just agree with you and say it's going to end up being Trey Flowers. When it's all said and done, it will be Trey Flowers who they take late in the fifth round, even after Shaquem Griffin. And when he ends up starting, not this coming year, but the year after, a cornerback opposite Shaquem Griffin, we'll say, wow, they found their next Richard Sherman in the fifth round. Now, it's certainly possible he ends up being a little bit more like, what was your buddy who you like so much? They drafted late, who Sherman said was going to be a great corner.
Oh, Therald Simon.
Therald Simon. Maybe he's more Therald Simon. But I'll put my money on Trey Flowers right now as being a great value pick. Let me ask you about a guy who neither of us mentioned, but I wonder, what about the tackle from Ohio State? Where will he end up in terms of a value pick?
Yeah,
saw him play, right? You did Ohio State.
I did. You know, in such a different system. I mean, that system is such a run option. It's just not what you do a ton in the NFL. We saw that with Nick Vinette. We've seen that with some of their different guys.
Okay, so the value pick, that's one that, the most value, and maybe, Shaquem Griffin is going to be, Shaquem Griffin might be the right one, because, again, you're talking about somebody who's going to be versatile. He's going to start at the weak side linebacker position as far as being a backup and then play on special teams. You know, the guy that I think is kind of the polarizing one, because you don't want to really put too much into it, is going to be their punter. The punter, of course, is one that, very well could end up being so good because of field position, trying to at least put the ball inside the 20-yard line. I mean, he's the one who's going to probably get the most action, say, other than Rashard Penny, who, of course, he's the first-round pick, so there's obviously great value in him, but he is a first-round pick. I kind of look more Rakeem Green. Rashim Green, because I think that he very well could come in, and take a little bit of that Michael Bennett role, not the starter, but maybe help out a lot with inside pass rush, and that's going to be one of the things that they were hoping to get last year out of Malik McDowell and hoping to get out of Sheldon Richardson. A lot I think is into this draft. Certainly, the Trey Flowers I think in time is going to be a very good player, and we'll talk to him during the course of this show in the next hour to see how he feels he can fit in and make that conversion from safety to corner. But I think overall what you're looking at is that this class is very similar to 2011 in the sense that, okay, up top they looked offense for the first pick. They looked at James Carpenter and, of course, eventually John Moffitt in the third round. And then after that, took a lot of players who fit the system. It just takes time to learn. You know, fit the system in the sense that, you know, they want a defensive end, a five technique end who can come in and also rush the quarterback from the defensive tackle position. You know, a safety who can convert to corner. And so, I don't know, Maura, who do you kind of think could be the value pick of this draft for Seattle?
Well, I really like Rashad Penny, but I mean, I don't know if you can call him a value pick because he was a first rounder, but you know, they think they got something that other people kind of maybe didn't put as much of a value on in him. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do. I do think you have to tell Jim Moore today that you talked up the punter because that was his pick mm-hmm. for who was going to make the biggest difference. And they made a lot of fun of him on Danny David Moore yesterday.
Not surprising, but yeah. So, I mean, that's, and really, you know, because they still haven't done anything with John Ryan yet, and we'll see, you know, if eventually they do release him early or late or have open competition. But of course, when you put a fifth round value on somebody and his salary is low, you would anticipate that, you know, he's got the best chance to try to come in there and be able to play. So that's going to be kind of fascinating to watch overall. But I do like the idea that, you know, this is a versatile group. And again, you can see where it's not going to get good grades elsewhere. That's understandable. It's because, you know, a lot of people, and again, what's so crazy about how people were judging this draft, it's like, well, I can't believe they didn't do anything at cornerback. Well, they did. They drafted Trey Flowers. I mean, just because he's listed as a safety doesn't mean that they were ignoring the cornerback position. I mean, they got Byron Maxwell done last week and officially announced him as a cornerback signed yesterday. And they also then came back and were able to do something with now Flowers. But I just kind of like this draft because, again, it just kind of goes back old school to 2011, where the expectations aren't really there nationwide, but I think the expectations locally, I think, are pretty good because I think you can see that these are all scheme fits. These are all guys that kind of fit exactly what this team is looking for, and I'm really looking forward on the weekend to see Green because, again, 270-some pounds, good pass rusher, particularly on the inside. He'll bulk up to 290 pounds. I know we talked to Clancy Pendergast yesterday, and he anticipates he'll probably end up playing like 35% of the time and a lot on passing situations. And so he'll be part of the rotation, and then we'll see how much he'll get in on rundowns. And so, and again, Penny is the one that most people did not have, and Pro Football Focus ends up having him being a 900-plus yard running back this year, which, of course, you talked about impact. I mean, that would equal the value of what you would want from a first-round pick, particularly a first-round running back. So I think that, you know, this draft, I think, had a lot of interest and a lot that's going to follow up. We'll see how they do as far as how many guys are coming in for tryouts this weekend. They've already got about 14 undrafted guys that have already signed, and so you know, we'll see how many more they are going to bring in. But I think overall it's going to be kind of fun, and again, it's a different attitude that I think you can see. You know, a lot of these guys are coming in humble. They're not coming in with braggadocious type of ways and all that stuff. So I think that it's a good group, kind of a quiet group. I know last year's group was pretty quiet, particularly Shaquille Griffin. I mean, he kind of quietly sat by his locker, didn't make a lot of noise and all that. So, you know, this is a very different style of player that comes in. And again, maybe it is very much like 2011 because, you know, Richard Sherman came in here humble and then eventually caught on, got a chance to play in his first year, and then became a superstar. So good draft, interesting draft, and we'll continue to look at that draft. And, of course, Trey Flowers joining us in the next hour. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Well, coming up next, we will go and take a look and talk about what's going on with the Mariners and the injuries. Shannon Dreyer comes and joins us. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And Shannon, of course, We hadn't talked injuries for a while, and things look like, particularly as you got to the beginning of the weekend, that Ryan Healy came back, and for the first time, the entire team was assembled. Well, guess what? Yesterday, two guys on the pitching staff go on the injured reserve list, and Erasmo Ramirez, of course, suffering the most serious of the injuries. First off, how bad does it look for Erasmo, knowing that, at least according to Scott Service, he may be out a month?
Well, I think that's the key there. He may be out a month, and they tend to take a little bit longer than what we hear with the original diagnosis, so it could be longer. The good news is it is just a strain. It is just a matter right now of getting rest, but he's going to have to kind of rebuild up again after having to just do that before he came back. So it would appear he's going to be out for some time with LeBlanc. Well, in the meantime, get his starts. And they've got some other options down in AAA kind of building up and coming along. But LeBlanc actually did some good work for this team in relief or in as a spot starter and as an emergency starter a couple of years ago. So it'll be interesting to see what he's got right now.
Yeah, and because, I mean, he's done pretty well since coming here. But, of course, and then, of course, you got Danny Altavilla, which seemed like a little bit of a minor injury, but he's going to be out for 10 days.
Yeah, let's hope that one doesn't go too long. That's the one that is more concerning, just because the bullpen, you know, it's been a solid bullpen, but you're already down David Phelps right now, and you don't really have any kind of back end of the type rotation or even like seventh inning guy ready in the minor league. So that leaves a pretty big hole, and the help with Altavilla was they didn't want to rush him too much, but he's got great stuff. He has got potential back end of the bullpen stuff. And this is a guy that they were really hoping could help out quite a bit in seventh, help out in the eighth when needed. And right now he's going to be sidelined for a bit. So that one, I think that ultimately could hurt more than losing the starter.
Oh, yeah, and that's certainly not good at all, and that's what you don't want to see is, like, more injuries, particularly after this team went through all those pitching injuries last year. And so now it leads to one thing that is kind of like bubbling through the community, but nobody knows for sure because, you know, now that Guillermo Heredia has been brought up, there's the thought that could this be the last week of Ichiro. And I know that some of the things that I was hearing that maybe, just maybe, I mean, would he retire over the weekend, maybe on Sunday, to retire a Mariner? Have they kept him around just to make sure if he does want to step down and does want to get out of baseball, he does it in a Mariner uniform?
Well, I think that from the get-go on this one, from the outset, it was important that if this moment came, it was handled correctly. It was important to the organization that they handled it correctly. And you can look back to Ken Griffey Jr. and how he left, and you don't want any sort of repeat with that. You've already had that happen with one icon, and thankfully, all's well that ended well with that. He went into the Hall of Fame as a Mariner, and you know the hard feelings have somewhat been put aside in that one, but you don't want that kind of spectacle again, particularly with another Hall of Famer in Ichiro. So, you know, my understanding all along has been that there was an exit strategy that was written into the contract, and I think that when it is time, I think Ichiro, he'll know it himself. I don't think there's going to be any big drama with that. So I think it's very important that the team handle that correctly. I know it was tough to see Heredia sent down, but in truth, he would not have been used very much in those games on that road trip, and I don't think I can point to a loss that happened because he was not on the roster. He had the opportunity to play more in Tacoma, and now he's back. So, you know, it's a tough fit for Ichiro right now, and I think that he knows where he's at, and I think that's important, and I think, you know, we'll see what happens this weekend, but I have all the confidence in the world that it's going to be handled correctly and not like what we saw before.
Yeah, because, again, I know when the move was made and what the reason was to keep him on the roster and send Heredia down was that they were facing a stretch of 10 right-handed pitchers in a row. And that would be, you know, the good left-handed bat of Ichiro would tend to fit that. But if you also add to the fact that it's like if he does want to get out of baseball and get out of baseball in a Mariner uniform, the best way to do it is at a home game. And maybe, you know, because could you imagine if indeed they make some kind of announcement that it's going to be Ichiro Day on Sunday, the day after Ohtani's supposed to pitch, you know, what kind of crowd that this franchise could draw this weekend?
I would hope it would be very big. And, you know, here's the thing. You hear the criticism, and Mike Salk will talk quite a bit about how Twitter is kind of the loud minority. And if you read things on Twitter and just kind of the negativity toward the move, and you know, you hear kind of the conversations about it, go to the ballpark and tell me what you hear when it comes to Ichiro. You know, go there opening day, and there are 48,000 in the stands who are thrilled to see him out there. And I think, you know, there's a huge fan base that so appreciates what he did for this organization in the early 2000s, the player that he has been, the fact that he will go into the Hall of Fame wearing a Mariners uniform someday, and the fact that, hey, we were kids when this guy was doing all these things, and now we're adults. We want our kids to see this. I mean, that's baseball. And again, I don't feel like there has been any game that has been lost because he's been out there. So, you know, you hope that some of that can be put aside, that you kind of hear that noise, and that, again, that if it is handled correctly, that it is a great moment both for Ichiro and the organization as well.
How would you say that he's played since re-signing with the team?
Well, he hasn't played very much. You know, he's 44 years old, John, and I don't think that there is kind of any magic anything that you can do. He's stretched it beyond what most could do, and, you know, it was amazing what he was able to do, mainly as a pinch hitter last year and then kind of in a fill-in role as the year before. But, you know, he's not the same Ichiro. He's 44-year-old Ichiro. He's not as fast. He's still getting back the ball, but he's not outrunning it to first base, and we haven't really seen him put anything out of the infield. We saw a brilliant play at the wall in the second homestand of the season, and we saw some bobbles as well. But I think he is playing as you would expect Ichiro to play at the age of 44, which is ridiculous. It's mm-hmm. ridiculous that he's, you know, even able to get out there right now, and, you know, he is. But, you know, it's not the Ichiro that we saw when he kind of crossed locker rooms and went over to the New York Yankees clubhouse years ago when he left the team.
Yeah, that was a kind of a strange scene. I was kind of, and that's why I think the suspicions there that it could happen this weekend, in the sense is that they're going with LeBlanc and not bringing up Ariel Miranda, which, you know, he would be the natural replacement for Ramirez. But, you know, go with LeBlanc, and that buys, you know, an extra weekend to see if Ichiro can do it. Because, again, if he's going to be off the roster, because I don't know, because they said so many times, there's only so long that you can carry five outfielders.
Yeah, no, it's not a good fit, especially if they want to go with eight in the pen, which they don't have right now. But your starters are starting to get a little bit deeper in the game, and they did bring up Casey Lawrence, so, you know, they could have conceivably gone to Miranda. I do think that they want to see what LeBlanc has. In fact, when they signed him, there was a lot of talk at this that he would be used primarily as a spot starter as well. So this is something they're very comfortable with doing. I think they're interested to see. He's put in some very nice long relief work for them the last couple of times out. So it'll be interesting to see if this is a one-time thing or if he keeps that spot. But the way that Seth Service kind of worded it the other day, it sounded like, you know, it wasn't a spot start. He's moving into the rotation in that spot for now.
Edwin Diaz continues to just dominate as a reliever. I mean, he got his 12th save. It was his 15th game. Is there any kind of plan just to make sure that they don't overuse him?
Yeah, they check in with him every day. And, you know, we did see a time last year coming right out of the All-Star break where he pitched 4 days in a row. And that opportunity may have come up again on the road trip. They lost the game, but they were not going to go to Edwin in that situation. That Juan Nicasio was going to close if that came up. So, you know, it's something that they are monitoring closely, and something that, you know, they've been candid with. If they're going to win a lot of games, he can't close them all. He can't, you know, pitch 4 or 5 days in a row. So, you know, they're trying to make plans and contingencies for the days that he needs to be down, realizing that as good as he is right now and how he's helping them right now, if they get to where they want to be at the end of the season, they absolutely are going to need him to be at his best. So, you know, they're watching that very closely. Very carefully.
Yeah, no question about it. And again, the bullpen continues, particularly in innings 7 and 8, to be very, very effective.
Yeah, and that's where losing Dan Altavilla hurts. I know his last outing he was very, very wild, but before that he'd only given up runs, I think, in 2 of his outings before, and, you know, had some just absolute shutdown innings at the beginning of the season. So, you know, you want to get him back. That's where the question mark is now, and Nick Vincent is going to have to be strong in that role. You're going to have Casey Lawrence in that longer role, and you're just going to have to hope that you can kind of patch 7 together, because I do think, as you say, you feel good about Juan Nicasio right now, who looks completely different than he did at the beginning of the season. And he says it's just a matter of pitching more. He's a guy that needs to pitch, and at the beginning of the season, he hadn't pitched a lot. So it's actually been fun to see him coming in the eighth right now. And, you know, at some point, Edwin Diaz is going to blow a save. It's going to happen. But I don't think you could have asked for anything more from him in the first month.
Nope, absolutely. I mean, all-star and right now probably the MVP of the team. Shannon, you remain our MVP and continue to enjoy the homestand. You've spent a lot of time on the road.
Yep, and we head back again on Sunday, but after that we are going to be home for a while. So we're looking forward to enjoying May here.
Okay, Shannon Dreher, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can listen to my show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, coming up, we go behind the lines and look what's going on in the National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
10:45, we go behind the lines, and there's two big news stories developing today. We already touched on a little bit the kickoff changes that they are proposing, and it looks like they want to eliminate the two-man wedge. They want to have only three players back for the receiving team, try to eliminate some of that contact. They want to then have the kickoff team not make a running start like they do right now. So in other words, they line up at the 35-yard line and then just start going from there. So I guess trying to slow down the momentum and the of the guys that are coming down may be one way to try to cut down on the number of concussions. You know, they are allowing kickoffs this year. They're not changing that. And of course, yesterday they spent a whole day trying to go through the confusion over the heads down rule and trying to say, okay, that they only had about four chances for ejection last year. But of course, the scary thing is that you could average between two and five head down type penalties a game, and some of those are going to have to lead to replay. So that's the one developing news story. The other one that's going on as we speak is today's a deadline day in the sense that you have to have your fifth year options for your 2015 draft choices, first round picks. And it looks like as it stands now, about 21 of those picks, maybe 21 or 22, are being picked up right now. Two just came out. Cedric Aboia, the offensive tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals, they did not pick up his fifth-year option. And then probably the biggest name is Ray out of the Denver Broncos. They did not pick up his option. And of course, he was a guy that a lot of people thought was a top 10 pick. In fact, John Elway, when he made that selection, came back and said he was supposed to be. He has not been picked up. But for the most part, if you look in the top 10, about eight of those have been picked up so far. Naturally, you know, the Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. We're still waiting word on Dante Fowler out of the Atlanta Falcons. No official word on that. Amari Cooper picked up his fifth-year option. Brandon Scherff, they picked up his fifth-year option with Washington. Naturally, Leon Williams had the Jets pick up that option. Vic Beasley in Atlanta had that option. Of course, you know, Fowler's with Jacksonville. Todd Gurley option picked up, and you know, Waynes at Minnesota. So most of the ones are being picked up, and it usually goes 20 to 23. And what this does is it's one where you know they get the tender, which if it's going to be a top 10 pick, it's going to be a transition tender, and once it gets into the league year in March, then that becomes a guarantee. You can pull it at any time, and so the range is probably after about 10, you know, like $9 million, because what you do is you take the top 25 cap numbers at the position, and then you eliminate the top two. So it's 3 through 25, and then they get a number like, you know, for a cornerback, it's going to be $9,069,000 $9,069,000. And so that is being done right now. So over the course of the day, big decisions are being made, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Atlanta Falcons because, you know, they picked, I mean, with the New England Patriots, the Patriots ended up having two players that they traded for, Sheldon from Washington. They have to decide if they're going to do something with him, and then they also have to see if they want to pick up the option on Dorsett, the wide receiver that they traded from Indianapolis. So those decisions are being made today. But I guess probably the biggest thing is now to get into the kickoff rule. And again, this one is not one, at least with the changes they're making, and they knew that they weren't going to make dramatic changes, eliminate the kickoff this year. year. But I think it's kind of interesting. The two-man wedge goes, and then you start, and everybody lines up at the 35-yard line and then starts to run with no running starts. Maury, do you think that could help a little bit and cut down the number that they're going to have as far as concussions?
It may be able to, John. I don't. It's weird because I feel like when you watch the game, you don't notice it, but apparently the numbers show that it's a more dangerous thing. I'm glad to hear that they're not going to eliminate them completely. Troy Vincent came out and said they will absolutely not do that, but I still even hate to see them keep tweaking it. We talked to Devin Hester on the podcast last week, and he talked just over his career with the changes that they made about how much more difficult it made it. It's such an exciting play. You know, we have a player like Tyler Lockett here in Seattle that it's so fun to watch. Dante Pettis went to the Niners. At least he does punts, so we'll still get to see that. But it's, I don't know. I hate to see the changes.
Yeah, and that's where, the way that having the guys, what this could do is lead to a little bit more excitement, because now what you have is that, everybody is pretty much going to be within a 15-yard radius of each other. You're going to have, eight of the guys on the kickoff return team, all there, because only three are going to be back. And again, this is a proposal that still has to be voted on. It'll be voted on at the meeting in Atlanta coming up on the 21st, but you can see that the lack of a running start, just going from the 35-yard line, that's going to be slower for the guys getting down there, because now they're not going to get that great start that they would have with the running start. And so that may open things up for maybe some more returns. I mean, maybe guys getting out there past the 25-yard line. That could add a little bit of excitement to it. And as long as it cuts down on the concussion part and the collisions, I guess that could be a good thing. That one I think is okay, eliminating the running start, because you build up the momentum, you get down there faster, and so they're trying to stop that. So they are trying to make these bold changes. I still am so confused as over what they were talking about yesterday and what they concluded, with the idea, like, they think it's okay to add 2 to 5 more penalties a game that you normally wouldn't have. And that's, of course, with the heads down rule. Yes, you want to try to teach everybody to keep the head up and do that. But again, if you have that slippage and you just kind of do it accidentally, it could still lead to a penalty. Won't lead to an ejection, but still lead to a penalty. And then maybe they have to review it. I just think the stoppages in the game are not a good thing, Maura.
Oh, I totally agree. And I was reading an article from the Chicago Tribune earlier where they talked to Anthony Lynn and Dan Quinn from the Falcons, and they said they spent hours yesterday going over this, and they feel better about it. But Dan Quinn said he's still about 90% sure how this rule's going to work. I just think it's going to leave a lot of room for interpretation. I think you're going to see some crews that call it a bunch, and some games where, the running back's lowering his head every play and it doesn't get called. I feel like it's going to differ a lot position by position, too, and I just don't understand how they're going to regulate that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's going to be problems. I think it will be. And again, there's going to be an adjustment. And, of course, the adjustments, when they go bad, they can go bad. And I think when you have, that many flags that potentially can be thrown, that, it's not going to do good things. And you know what's going to happen in the preseason. It's going to make the preseason ugly, because one of the things that they do is that they throw it. If there's any doubt, they're going to throw the flag. And that just is going to lead to a lot of stoppages, and it's like, ugh. I mean, the preseason games are bad enough, but now to have a slower preseason with all the penalties and all that stuff, I mean, you go to games not to see the officials, you go to see the players. And if the players don't get the opportunity to fully play, then that's not a good thing. That's a problem. And so I worry that this could be something that is going to be a setback for the for games. And again, what happens if you have a game where you're going to have 7 of these penalties? What happens if the players don't pick up the ability to make the right moves and all that stuff? I think this has a chance to really, really go bad.
Yeah, and as Mike Florio mentioned in one of the cuts we used in the top five, he mentioned that Danny Trevathan hit would have been an ejection last year, whereas it was just a suspension. And that hit stands out to me from all of last season, because it was a really bad one. And I think that targeting should be more on plays like that, where you can tell right away that is not okay and the player should be punished or ejected from the game. And instead of just saying anybody on the field that lowers their head, when there's certain positions that kind of have to do that.
Right. Yeah, and that's where I think it's going to be a little scary. I think they've got to really think through this. And, of course, this is the process of trying to think through it. But, unfortunately, it still leads to more confusion. And, of course, if you're the coach and you're sitting there in that meeting, you still don't know what to tell your players. I think that's going to be the bad part about all this. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Coming up next, we'll talk to Trey Flowers, making the conversion from safety to cornerback. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.